and that you're willing to give your life for the defense of your people.
They're laughing their heads off. They think it's just a riot to reenact the method of murdering an innocent young man.
How in the hell could you trust them with a vaccine after you know what they have done and that they're capable of doing it again on a bigger and broader level?
Is Trump scheming to stay in office if he loses in November? The Not Effing Around Coalition stands ready to defend blacks against white violence. Cops joking about the murder of Elijah McCain laughed themselves right out of their jobs. And a stern warning against using any U.S. vaccine against the coronavirus. This is Pacifica's COVID Race and Democracy. I'm Verna Avery Brown. But first, these news headlines from Pacifica affiliate KBBF-FM in Santa Rosa, California.
These are the headlines for Pacifica's COVID Race and Democracy. I'm Edgar Avila.
The reality of months and months of people's lives being disrupted, people have lost their livelihood, the pain that people have gone through, the loss of life, the frustration. We're in a very particular moment. There's no parallel.
New York cuts police budget by $1 billion. While hundreds of protesters waited outside, the New York City Council approved a budget last Tuesday night that cuts funding for police by $1 billion. The cuts include reallocating funds to the Department of Education, the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, and other agencies. The police department will hand over control of the school safety program as well as homeless outreach services to other related departments. City Council Speaker Corey Johnson said that the cuts did not go far enough, citing, among other things, the fact that two new police academy classes will be added when a hiring freeze was one of the demands.
Officers ordered the man to drop the gun, but he refused. The man repeatedly told officers to shoot him and lifted the gun toward the officers.
Phoenix police shoot man in parked car. Four Phoenix police officers shot 20-year-old James J. Garcia in a parked car on Saturday, stating that he pointed a gun at them. According to witnesses, the police were responding to an unrelated nearby call. Bystander video of the event shows the officers talking to the man, an officer swinging an object at the passenger side window, and gunshots firing after the window breaks. The video does not show much of the 10 minutes of interaction the police had with the man prior to the shooting. Police released body camera footage of the events directly after the shooting that shows an officer pulling a gun out of the car. Witnesses say that the man was not holding a gun, but had his hands on the steering wheel. Police are refusing to release body camera footage of the events prior to pulling the gun out of the car.
You know, I sent out a letter today to Mr. Trump, you know, advising him and stating reasons why he is not permitted to enter the treaty territory at this time due to the lack of consultation with the sovereign leaders of the Great Sioux Nation. There's been no correspondence from his staff or himself.
Trump holds rally at Mount Rushmore, ignoring tribe sovereignty. President Donald Trump held the 4th of July rally at Mount Rushmore in South Dakota, known as the Black Hills or Hey Sapa on Lakota unceded territory. 15 protesters were arrested blocking the road to the event after Trump ignored statements from the tribal leaders that he was not welcome in the area. A 1980 Supreme Court ruling declared that the Black Hills was illegally stolen from the Lakota Nation, but since the judicial branch cannot award land back to the tribes, it offered only monetary compensation, which the Lakota have refused to accept to this day.
Hey folks, me and the men and women of the Clay County Sheriff's Office, which just want to weigh in on what we're seeing going on, played out across the media or mainstream media in this country. Look folks, don't fall victim to subjecting yourselves to this conversation that law enforcement is bad, that law enforcement is the enemy of the citizens that we're sworn to protect and serve. We swore an oath. And in that oath,
Florida sheriff threatens to deputize gun owners against protesters. Controversial Clay County Sheriff Daryl Daniels released a video last Tuesday warning that he will, quote, make special deputies of every lawful gun owner in this county if he feels that the county is overwhelmed by protesters. Standing in front of a line of deputies and speaking over dramatic music, Daniels, who is black, declares that God is absent from the Black Lives Matter movement and that it is disrupting the way of life of county residents. Daniels did not make clear if his new deputies would include gun-owning protesters. And those are the headlines in today's news. I'm Edgar Avila from KBBF Radio.
President Donald Trump is scheming to retain power in the event of an electoral loss in November. That's according to former U.S. Senator from Colorado Tim Wirth, who published an op-ed in Newsweek where he lays out his theory. Wirth predicts Trump will claim the election was rigged, attempt to discredit it by blaming mail-in ballots and Chinese interference. And his game plan relies heavily on purging voters from the rolls and other tactics to suppress the Democratic vote. Investigative journalist Greg Palast is the author of his soon-to-be-released book, How Trump Stole 2020, The Hunt for America's Vanished Vote. He's been investigating voter suppression on the part of Republicans for decades and told COVID Race and Democracy the purging is already underway.
The real dangers of mail-in voting, I know everyone's applauding mail-in voting, but we do have to understand that it can be very dangerous, especially in low-income communities, where they've been purging the voter rolls. So you can't mail in your ballot, Verna, if it's not mailed to you. And about half of the requests get lost, come in late, etc. And if you are a low-income person, a person who's a renter has moved within a building, anything like that, these are the voters, and young people, these are the voters who don't get their mail-in ballots mm-hmm. and therefore can't send them back.
So they wouldn't even realize that their votes are being suppressed until
That's right.
it's too late.
They don't know
late.
Why they didn't get, for example, you're not on the voter rolls anymore. It's not like they send you call you up and say, you know, re-register. They should. Most states have your phone number and your email. They shouldn't remove you in the first place. But you don't know, and this is the big danger. Mm. Plus, even if you know big problems, you know, in Alabama, where Doug Jones is fighting for his life, you have to have a notary to mail in. You have to have someone notarize your ballot or two witnesses. Wisconsin, you need a witness. Minnesota, you need a witness. So you're going to have all these problems with mail-in voting. And, Verna, we also have a huge problem that after people cast ballots, ballots get rejected for all kinds of cockamamie reasons.
Well, before we get to that, what can voters do about the fact that they don't get their ballots? Anything? And
well,
who is
number
they,
one.
Who is they that are removing these names, and how are they allowed to get away with this?
Ah, okay. It's mostly the secretaries of state, GOP secretaries of state for the most part. Are removing people on really spurious grounds without challenge. I will say in Wisconsin, for example, the state which the Democrats took over the state and the elections board is trying to refuse to remove voters. I've just gone through their voter purge list and found out that they are about to remove over 100,000 people for moving from Wisconsin. So we don't get the notices, but there's a lot we can do. Number one, check your registration. Please check your registration. I checked my registration in California, Greg Palast, and said no such voter. So I re-registered online right away. Number one, just check your registration and
online.
Re-register. Yes, online. Most states, it's Secretary of State or County Board of Elections. If you can't find it, go to vote.org.
Mm-hmm.
Very important. Also, at gregpalast.com, we will be putting up from several states, Georgia, Indiana, Wisconsin, Michigan, et cetera, purge lists. That is, lists of voters who've been purged. You can look yourself up to see if you have been removed. That's the other thing to do. And remember, you got about 1 in 12 voters who've been removed from the rolls, including me, including Martin Luther King's cousin. Don't assume it's not you. That's the number one thing. And then the second thing is make sure that you ask for your mail-in ballot early, and if you're not getting it within 2 weeks of the election, you'd better call your county board and find out what happened. It's not going to be easy to vote this time, and this is a real danger. And if there's a collapse, here's my big concern. If there's a collapse of the mail-in system, which is already pretty creaky, you're going to have some states like Florida where you have Republican legislatures. You might have states like Florida, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, likely to go for Biden, but the legislatures will say, oh, there was a collapse of the voting system, so we can't certify our electors. And twice in American history we've had this.
So you think that'll be the strategy?
Yes, to not, if he loses in the swing states and doesn't get the electoral votes, I think that states are simply not going to certify the vote. They'll say it's a complete mess. And then it goes to the House, and every state gets a single vote. That reelects Trump. Real danger. So we have to really watch this vote. We got to make it so big it can't be stolen. And I'm not. It's not whether you're for or against Trump. It's whether you're for or against democracy, letting the, you know, why do we let Americans decide who should be president, not the trickery?
What are the chances of it going to the Supreme Court again, as it did in the past?
I think it's high, but look at our court. It's worse than in 2000. And we have the same Jim Crow tricks, Vernon, and they've just added more. Instead of being, it's since the gutting of the Voting Rights Act in 2013, we've had not only massive purges, but huge problems in getting people's votes counted. That's the other thing. I'm very worried that just simply, we already have millions of votes not counted in America. That's one of our dirty secrets, Verna, which is that we don't count all the ballots in America. And in places like Florida, according to the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, if you're black, the chance your vote will be disqualified after you cast it is 900% higher than if you're white. 900% higher than if you're white. And it's not small. Understand that according to the EAC, not Greg Palast, but according to the official numbers, you had 2 million ballots cast, thrown away. That's the in-precinct ballots for various technical reasons. They couldn't read it, someone put a check mark, was folded wrong, etc. We also have more than 1 million mail-in ballots lost. And we had just short of 1 million provisional ballots disqualified. And understand, if you're Hispanic, it's 300% more likely you're going to get that provisional bogus ballot than a white person. 250% more likely if you're black to get a provisional ballot than a white person.
And so quickly explain the provisional ballot. That you show up and they can't...
Just very simply, yeah, you show up, they don't like your ID, they don't like your face, they say they don't like your address, they don't like your signature, something. And by the way, overwhelmingly black men get this treatment, especially young black men. And they give you what they call a provisional ballot. So you don't get a regular ballot. It goes into an envelope. You have to make out the envelope. By the way, make a little mistake on the envelope, you've lost your vote. Make a mistake on that piece of paper inside, including such crazy things as putting a check mark next to a candidate instead of filling in the bubble in many states, you lose your vote. So it's about 40%, almost half of the provisional ballots cast are never counted. And that's 1 million votes, mostly voters of color.
Well, they don't know how will they know that's a vote from a black person? That's a vote from a white person.
Because they only give the provisional ballots, not only, but overwhelmingly, if you are young and African-American, you will be given that provisional ballot. And just the chances that anyone given a provisional ballot, about 40% chance your ballot will be disqualified on technical grounds. Often, they'll give you a provisional ballot, like in my book, How Trump Stole 2020. I have Raheem Shabazz in Atlanta. He was illegally purged from the voter rolls. They said, well, you're not here, but you can have a provisional ballot. Now, understand, in Georgia, by law, they have to give you a provisional ballot, but by law, they're not going to count that ballot. So they literally just make you think you voted. It's like a placebo ballot, make you think you voted. So at least Raheem was very aware that they were giving him a bogus ballot. They did give him an I voted sticker, you know, printed on a Georgia peach. I'm not kidding you. But this is the problem. It's we have this mass non-count of votes, and it's overwhelmingly non-count of voters of color.
Investigative journalist Greg Palast writes for The Guardian and the BBC. His latest book, How Trump Stole 2020, America's Vanishing Vote, will be out in mid-July. 3 Colorado police officers have been sacked after they shared photos reenacting a chokehold used on 23-year-old Elijah McCain, who later died. McCain's case has attracted renewed focus in the wake of the murder of George Floyd, another unarmed African-American who died in police custody. Maury Newman, the attorney for the McCain family, described the event that led to his death.
Elijah was just walking down the street. He had gone to get some iced tea from the corner store that was just blocks away from his home. He was wearing a mask, which was his habit, and people in the neighborhood knew him. He was moving his arms to music as he walked down the street, and somebody passing by in a car called 911. The 911 caller told the operator that Elijah was acting strangely, but also that he had no weapon, that he was not suspected of committing any kind of a crime, and that the caller made it very clear that there was nobody in danger and that Elijah was not committing any kind of a crime. Nonetheless, three Aurora police officers illegally stopped Elijah, grabbed him, threw him up against a wall, and then tackled him to the ground, where they inflicted multiple kinds of force on him over the course of about 15 minutes. They used two karate chokeholds and various other kinds of excessive force. Ultimately, Elijah was laying on the ground vomiting from all of the force that was being inflicted on him. Officers stood by joking things like, "Don't get that on me," as he was vomiting. Medics came in and shot him with a massive dose of ketamine. They had no legal right to give him any ketamine at all, but the dosage that they gave him was a dosage more appropriate for somebody who weighed more than twice his amount.
What is ketamine?
He was a small guy.
What is
ketamine? Is a drug that has often been used actually to tranquilize large animals by veterinarians. It's been used commonly on horses, actually. And so even though Elijah was handcuffed on the ground, he was not fighting. He was simply struggling to breathe and, in fact, saying those horrible words that we've heard so many times before, "I can't breathe." He then suffered two heart attacks on the way to the hospital and was kept on life support for a few days, but he was gone.
Yet the officers were found to have followed protocol and were not fired, but reassigned to another jurisdiction.
The officers actually weren't even reassigned to another jurisdiction. They continued to work as Aurora police officers, and that speaks to just what kind of department the Aurora Police Department is. When these officers attacked an innocent young man who was simply walking home in his black skin and ultimately killed him, that was consistent with the custom policy and practice of the Aurora Police Department. They've recently been assigned to desk duty, but not to keep the public safe, only because their names have recently become so public that the department is concerned for their safety. But there's never been one iota of concern for the public, despite the fact that these are brutal racist officers.
Now, you're calling for an independent investigation. Do you suspect, attorney, that there's more to this case than has been revealed thus far?
You know, new things keep coming out on this case all the time. We began calling for an independent investigation last fall because it was clear when Aurora exonerated all of the officers that there needed to be an independent investigation. Now, finally, after there's been international media attention, there has been an independent investigator appointed, and I'm looking forward to seeing what comes of that. But new evidence just keeps coming up. In fact, just last week we learned that back in the fall, three officers, two of whom had been on the scene and failed to intervene to save Elijah, went back to the scene and reenacted the chokehold that was used to kill Elijah. As though there was something funny about it. You can see in the photograph, they're laughing their heads off. They think it's just a riot. They then sent those photos around to other members of the department. In fact, the two officers who had killed Elijah, the third one, they didn't have his cell phone number, so they didn't send it to him. But they sent it because they thought it would cheer them up. I mean, when you've got police officers who are making a joke about murdering an innocent young man, but this is something that had not been previously exposed, even in Aurora's own so-called investigation.
But those officers, to be clear, they were fired, were they not?
Yes. So last week on Friday afternoon, the officers who reenacted the murder of Elijah McClain and sent it around, and one of the actual killers whose response was, "Ha ha," when he received those reenactment photos, those officers were fired. One of them resigned. But the other officers who actually killed Elijah McClain and who stood idly by as that happened, as well as the medics who shot him with that massive dose of ketamine, have not been fired.
We know, Attorney Newman, that Elijah was an introvert. How did that manifest in Elijah? Tell us who this young man was.
Elijah, by all accounts, was an incredible person, a loving person who worked to heal others and himself through massage therapy. He taught himself to play both the violin and the guitar. He was an artist. I mean, he sounds like he was just an incredible young man. This is every parent's worst nightmare, that even responding politely to the police did not save this poor young man's life.
Mari Newman, the attorney for the Elijah McCain family. Reverse racism comedian Amar Rahman.
A lot of people don't like my comedy. A lot of white people don't like my comedy. A lot of white people say this to me. Hey, Amar. Hey. Get on stage. You make your jokes about white people. You say white people this, white people that. What if I did something like that, huh? What if I got on stage and I said, yeah, black people are like this. Muslims are like that. You'd probably call me a racist, wouldn't you? And I say, yeah, I would. Yeah, you should never do that. That's bad for your health. They're like, well, you do that, Amir. You do that. You get on stage, you make your jokes about white people. Don't you think that's a kind of racism? Don't you think that's dun 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 reverse racism? I said, no, I don't think that's reverse racism. Not because I think reverse racism doesn't exist, right? If you ask some black and brown people, they'll tell you flat out there is no such thing as reverse racism. I don't agree with that. I think there is such a thing as reverse racism, and I could be a reverse racist if I wanted to. All I would need would be a time machine, right? And what I'd do is I'd get in my time machine, I'd go back in time to before Europe colonized the world, right? And I'd convince the leaders of Africa, Asia, the Middle East, Central and South America to invade and colonize Europe, right? Just occupy them, steal their land and resources, set up some kind of, like, I don't know, trans-Asian slave trade where we exported white people to work on giant rice plantations in China. Just ruin Europe over the course of a couple of centuries so all their descendants would want to migrate out and live in the places where black and brown people come from. But of course, in that time, I'd make sure I set up systems that privilege black and brown people at every conceivable social, political, and economic opportunity. White people would never have any hope of real self-determination. Just every couple of decades, make up some fake war as an excuse to go and bomb them back to the Stone Age and say it's for their own good because their culture's inferior, and then, just for kicks, subject white people to colored people's standards of beauty so they end up hating the color of their own skin, eyes, and hair. If, after hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years of that, I got on stage at a comedy show and said, hey, what's the deal with white people? Why can't they dance? That would be reverse racism. Marvin, thank you. You've been great. Good night.
A black militia group created to protect blacks against white racist violence says they are armed, loaded, and ready to defend. Grandmaster Jay, the head of the Not Effin' Around Coalition, or the NFAC, spoke with COVID Race and Democracy about their mission.
Three key needs within that were affecting the black community. When I say the black community, I'm speaking of those folks that are direct descendants of African slavery. The first one was a response to the continued brutality against black folks, whether at the hands of the police department or in general by some of these racial attacks we've seen doing things while black. The other was a response to the need for our own for self-policing. We have a need that remote policing model does not appear to be working, where we have an external agency monitoring crime within our neighborhoods based on laws and statutes, that it would be much more efficient if we were to police ourselves in accordance with those same laws and statutes, but with a relationship with those particular communities in the face of gentrification and a few other things. The final need was a response to a need for a black militia that is standing ready to combat these growing white militias that are expressing white supremacist views that are directly targeted at us, that have been agitated by the current administration that's been in the White House. And the last one, reason that we created the NFAC was to actually begin to build an awareness amongst our own community of being responsible gun owners and being aware of their rights under the Constitution with regards to firearms, and also to be able to assist some of those folks in the restoration of those constitutional rights that may have had some involvement with the penal system. Mm-hmm. Those were the overriding needs. And the very last one is more symbolic than anything else, and that is to restore some form of racial esteem, some high esteem for us as a people, to give us something to be proud of, to be a part of, and to learn some discipline so that we can begin to work on some of the other ills within our community, such as black-on-black crime, housing, and things of that nature. We have to be able to put together a security framework first before we can address those issues. Mm.
And so what is the criteria for being a member of the NFAC? I saw a woman, or I saw many women, actually, among the ranks in some of the pictures that were on the social media. Do you just have to be armed and ready? And I don't know, do you have to be prepared to die for the cause? Or what's the criteria?
Absolutely not. Several things. Initially, our requirements were preferably that you were already a licensed gun owner, that you had a carry concealed, that you owned firearms, and you had to own three different types of firearms, a semi-automatic rifle, and a pistol, and you had to be proficient with them, preferably ex-military because of the command and structure that is needed within a militia. Remember, we are a militia. We are not a protesting group. We don't demonstrate. We do none of those things. We do everything that a militia would do that could be called up in time to defend either the country or our people. So the requirements are that you have some form of some type of training where you understand that environment. However, if you were not, then of course, if you already own firearms and you also possess some form of a carry concealed license, which if not, you should be able to get one so that we would be able to abide by laws in all of the states. The other piece was you had to have a belief in the things that we just talked about, that you understood that there was an emergency going on with brutality, that we are in a situation where we have a problem with the policing model, that you had to agree wholeheartedly that we needed a militia to combat the white supremacists that were beginning to show up and encroach and doing things like what happened in Richmond, where you had some supremacists dressed like police with twisty ties out to perform fake arrests and to address some of the other threats. So in order to become a member, you had to agree with that these are all problems, and that you are, and I'm glad you said it, and that you're willing to give your life for the defense of your people.
Okay.
So once you actually get through that particular, there's a background check. Yes, we do vet everyone. This is not something you can just walk up and say, I want to be a member of because of your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to make sure that mentally you have the fortitude and you have to be a responsible gun owner. In other words, you cannot have purchased your weapon the day of and then show up and say, I want to join. If that's the case, then there's some training we need to do. And there are videos out where I've been training individuals that have bought, especially the sisters, that have volunteered to become more proficient with the weapon, not so much in a, I want to defend my home, but I want to defend my people. And those are the queens you saw out there with us. We don't discriminate with regards to sex. We believe that we're all equal in this particular endeavor. We came here as a community. We rose as a people. We were enslaved as a people. Then we should dig ourselves out as a people.
So is part of the intention of, in fact, to engage in armed confrontation with the KKK or other white militia groups? Or
we are a defensive organization. Mm-hmm. We don't attack anyone. We don't aggress anyone. We don't target anyone. We don't have an agenda to go after anyone that's being falsely reported in the media. We are not a hate group. We're not a terrorist group. We are a response. We are, now if engaged, we will defend ourselves. If we are engaged, we will defend ourselves as best as we can. But we are not an aggressor unit. We are not. We are not antagonists. We don't spew that kind of rhetoric. We only talk facts. And the facts of the matter are: we have been the victims for over 240 some years in this country, 400 years abroad, and even longer back. It is only intelligent, as Malcolm X said, that we defend ourselves. So anyone who cannot understand that doesn't understand the existence of why we're here or why the necessity was for us to exist.
And so when NFAC went to Stone Mountain, the home of the Ku Klux Klan, or actually a gathering point, popular gathering point for the Ku Klux Klan in Georgia, what was your intention there?
Our intention was twofold. That's a great question. The idea, number one, was to demonstrate and send the message to America that you all are celebrating a holiday that we do not. Because facts record and history records that at the time that this happened, we were slaves. We were enslaved. So there was no celebration for us. There is no freedom that we have enjoyed in this country. So our first objective was to not participate in that holiday, but to demonstrate that these freedoms that you've given us give us two rights that we do value. One is the right to peacefully assemble, and the other one is the right to bear arms legally. Nothing that we've done is outside the law, and that's what folks are missing. It's okay when these other folks do this, but as soon as black people do it, there's questions and there's concerns, and that something must be done. Why? That's your racism showing. The second point was, I chose Stone Mountain because, just as you said, the first iteration of the Ku Klux Klan right after Reconstruction was targeted at Catholic, Irish, and some of us, but not just specifically us. And then it was destroyed after 5 years of federal action. And then it came back in 1915 in Stone Mountain, right before the release of the movie Birth of a Nation. So what we wanted to do was send a message, and that message was very clear, that everything that we're seeing in this country, everything that from police brutality to housing discrimination to unfair judicial system, is nothing more but symptoms of the same mentality that pervaded throughout the KKK when it was a major organization that marched down the street of Washington, D.C., that those people did not go away, that they're still here. So we wanted to send a message from the heart. And since we're tearing down all of the symbols of this group that attempted to keep us enslaved, wanted to fight for our enslavement to continue and break off and be a foreign country, then guess what? We need to have that monument gone.
Jason William Mizell, a.k.a. Grandmaster J, is founder of the black militia group, the Not Effin' Around Coalition. Over 10,000 labor unionists, organizers, and community members rallied this past Juneteenth in Oakland, California. Steve Zeltzer of Pacifica reports the show of force triggered reaction from white racists.
The rally started at the SSA terminal at the Port of Oakland. Only one day later, racist Ku Klux Klan graffiti were put up in the lavatory of the terminal. ILWU leaders demanded an end to this terrorism when they commemorated July 5th, known as Bloody Thursday, when two workers were murdered by police in 1934 for supporting the longshore strike. President Trent Gilliss spoke at the rally.
There's an aura going around this country right now. There's some things happening that we have to use our labor to stop. Some of these things are hitting home. These things are hitting home. All of this is related. In 1934, our brothers and sisters back then paved the way for us to have these jobs and enjoy these conditions and benefits that we enjoy today. Right here at this terminal, okay, we've had more than two incidents of racial graffiti drawn on the walls. We've had nooses hung. This is in 2020. Over at the TraPac terminal, we've had swastikas drawn on the walls. We've had graffiti in the bathrooms. Over at 37, we've had the same thing. So I'm saying that to say this, brothers and sisters, the fight is never over. This is a continuous battle. We have to get our members in Local 10 and up and down this coast to understand that this battle never ends. This is a continuous battle. This is an ongoing struggle. Okay. The steps that our brothers and sisters in 1934 and since then have made, we have to honor that. We have to honor that. Because if it wasn't for the sacrifice of those brothers and sisters in our past, our ancestors, we would not be here. This would not be an option for us. We would not be enjoying these conditions and these benefits. In particular, my black and brown brothers and sisters.
That's right.
We would absolutely not be out here. Okay? You heard that saying, the first fired, the last hired, or I might have said it backwards, last hired, first fired. That still pertains today. When you're a member of the ILWU, you're fortunate enough to have a platform, a very powerful platform. As you can see by the brothers and sisters here on stage with me, and you look around and you see the brothers and sisters who are out here to support you and to support when you put the call out, that's power. On June 19th, when we were out here protesting and we had our caravan in March to Oscar Grant Plaza, that was power. That's absolute power. We have to start realizing and recognizing who we are. We need to definitely preserve and secure not only our union, but we need to continue to fight for the social justice and rights of working people all over the world. Realize who you are. My brothers and sisters out here, for the future, we have to each one teach one. We have to stay focused. We have to make sure that when it's time to put it down on these employers, because they are not our friends. If it was up to these employers, thank you. If it was up to these employers, we would be getting called the N-word on the job by the bosses. Okay? If it was up to the employers, we would be out here every day gathered like we are today. But the only thing, instead of having a caravan, we would be out here waiting for a job. Okay? The shape up is right. You would have a boss out here picking and choosing who works and who doesn't work. That's not far away from happening right now if we don't pay attention and stop it from happening. That's called systemic oppression. Systemic racism is a part of systemic oppression. We cannot allow these employers to divide us. We cannot allow these employers to treat us like slaves. And while we're not allowing them to treat us like slaves, we have to not allow employers all across this world to treat any workers like slaves.
Pacifica's Steve Zeltzer. In a widely publicized speech on the 4th of July, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam addressed the individuals who have died from the coronavirus, labeling them as martyrs rather than victims. He also issued a sharp rebuke of any U.S. vaccine that might become available to the public.
I'm about to ask the government,
yes, sir,
relieve our brothers and sisters in Cuba of the unjust burden,
yes,
of your embargo.
Yes, right.
Because we're not going to take no medicine that you, the killers of all of us, remember the syphilis experiment?
Yes, sir.
Remember what they did to the Native Americans,
yes,
with smallpox?
Yes,
remember the vaccine that they gave us for polio,
yes,
that was cancer itself?
Yes,
so how in the hell could you trust them with a vaccine after you know what they have done,
yes,
and that they're capable of doing it again on a bigger and broader level? It's government policy to reduce the population of the earth by 2 to 3 billion people. You know that, right? If you don't know it, I've been telling you about it. And they're using methods that Zbigniew Brzezinski mentioned. It's easier to kill 1 million people than it is to control 1 million people.
Yes, sir.
We will not accept your vaccine.
Yes, sir.
So you can slow down. Because whenever you bring it out, it's for your people.
Yes, sir.
You give it to them.
Because
we are not accepting death.
At all.
Because you are the very representative of death itself.
Yes, sir.
The pale horse.
Yes,
and everywhere you've gone in the world, hell went right behind,
yes,
you.
Sir.
We are sick of hell.
Yes, sir.
And we are sick of death.
Yes, sir.
So I'm saying in this election year, tell Mr. Trump, release Cuba.
Yes, sir.
Because we want our Cuban doctors to look after us. We don't trust you. We can't trust you no more, white folks.
Yes, sir.
Not with our lives.
No, sir.
We're not justified in so doing. So look, Cuba is ours.
Yes, sir.
We're looking into other therapies.
Yes, sir.
But we definitely will not accept your vaccine.
Yes, sir.
So in my dear brothers and sisters, conclusion, do not accept pacification. Yes, if they tear down monuments, Confederate flag, I know it makes you happy because you know what we suffered under the Confederate flag. But you suffered all of it under the American flag as well. We respect that flag. I would never advise you to disrespect the American flag. It is the flag of an independent nation that we have been blessed to live in and cursed at the same time. Yes, sir. But we are coming out of it with great what? We're coming out of it with an education that makes us the most well-educated black people on the planet. Yes, sir. Now with the knowledge of self and the knowledge of God and the knowledge of the enemy, you have power! Yes, sir.
The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam. Wear your freaking mask, Randy Rainbow.
Don't you think you should be following CDC guidelines and leading by example?
They're not mandatory guidelines. They're guidelines. They suggest you could wear them, don't have to wear them.
Well, I took the liberty of stopping by the drugstore on my way over and picked up a few samples for you to try out. Let's see. You got your standard three-layer disposable. Can't go wrong with that. This one's kind of fun and flirty, right? No? Let's see. They were all out of N95s, but the guy behind the counter said this was a very popular model. Huh?
I mean, most people can just make something out of a certain material. I won't be doing it personally.
You're looking awful grouchy. Cover your freaking face. Listen to Dr. Fauci. Cover your freaking face. Don't wait around for herd immunity, you reckless thug. And what a golden opportunity to hide that mug. Although you should require us to do what's right to do, you're siding with the virus, cause you're a virus too. So back up, girl, don't get in my space. And color your freaking face.
I don't see it for myself, I just know.
And if you're feeling fancy or on your way to prom, why not be more like Nancy? Make it a whole ensemble. Yes, tie up your face with a bandana, please. It's not taboo. Think of your poor old ailing Nana. She's counting on you not to kill her.
Please don't politicize it.
Don't be a pox like Pat.
Don't sit and scrutinize it. It's only common sense.
Don't spread droplets all over the place. Ew. Cover your freaking face.
You can do it, you don't have to do it. I'm choosing not to do it.
Da-da-dum, da-dum-dum, dance break. And in the same way, testing less would make COVID just quit. Maybe if we can't see your mouth, you won't say stupid sh**.
Don't thumb your nose at science. You'll find it doesn't work.
Of that non-compliance.
Don't be a selfish jerk.
Just stop drooling and slow down the pace. Just cover your freaking face.
Wearing a face mask, I don't see it for myself.
Cover your freaking face.
I'm choosing not to do it.
Girl, just put a paper bag over that thing.
COVID-19 cases in the U.S. have been surging in recent weeks in states like Arizona, California, Texas, and Florida. In total, the U.S. has confirmed more than 2.8 million cases, with 129,676 deaths, according to data from Johns Hopkins University. This weekend, 239 experts issued a statement confirming what many scientists have been saying for months. The virus lingers in the air indoors, affecting anyone nearby. And they warn that airborne transmission of the coronavirus in indoor settings has been underappreciated. Meanwhile, doctors Mark Alan Derry and Eric D. Griggs, note the virus has spiked among millennials.
Coronavirus transmission among young people has continued to rise, and people aged 18 to 49 make up about a third of total hospitalizations, according to CDC figures. Now, although young people have a better chance of surviving despite contracting the virus, the lives of those who are hospitalized may be negatively impacted indefinitely, given the lasting health effects the virus has, including strokes, kidney, and lung injuries. That can sometimes, and we don't know because we haven't been out long enough, but can last a long time. So, why are we seeing an increase in cases amongst young Americans? One major reason is related to super spreader events. Young people are the main demographic attending super spreader events such as large parties, concerts, rallies, festivals, and they're going out to bars and nightclubs. Now, many young people are asymptomatic or only have slight symptoms of the virus, but when they go to the super spreader events, they expose themselves to a large number of people potentially spreading or contracting the virus at these events. In order to try and combat the amount of cases rising amongst young people, many states are once again closing bars and nightclubs. And this is part of a larger trend which has seen at least 14 states pause their reopening plans. In our home state of Louisiana, our governor, John Bel Edwards, signed an executive order last week that stopped Louisiana moving to phase 3 because of the uptick in cases. Louisiana confirmed almost 900 new COVID-19 cases earlier this week, and the testing positive rate is up to 8.1%. It really should be below 5%. Now, almost half of these new coronavirus cases in Louisiana are people under the age of 29. And among this demographic, contact tracers have tracked a majority of these infections back to super spreader events. Doc Griggs, super spreader event, say it like five times. Why? We have to stop with these super spreader events.
I'm not going to say it because don't do it. Stay away from events with a bunch of people that spreads disease and people get sick. We're being reminded that young people aren't immune from the disease. The virus doesn't care what age you are. The virus doesn't spread the virus. People spread the virus. Just because you feel well doesn't mean that you're not sick, nor does it mean that you're not capable of spreading it to someone else. Not only can young people spread it to those in more vulnerable groups, they may also have intense and potentially long-lasting effects in themselves. One of our writers, for instance, contracted the virus a few months ago and is still experiencing health challenges to this day. It's important to remember that young people need to continue to follow proper health protocols to slow the spread of the virus while we're continuing to search for a cure. And if you're young, understand, hey, you, I'm talking to you. You have your part. Put your mask on and go home.
Super spreader event, super spreader event, super spreader event, super spreader event, super spreader event.
This is why we have a noise filter.
Doctors Mark Alan Derry and Eric D. Griggs. He was sitting on a bench in Central Park bird watching when Amy Cooper entered the area with her dog unleashed. There were signs requiring dogs to be on leashes, but she ignored them. And when Christian Cooper, an African-American man, asked her to leash her pup, she called 911. And falsely reported that an African-American man with a helmet was threatening her dog. The entire incident was taped and showed no threats whatsoever. Yesterday, she was arrested and charged with making a false report, which is a misdemeanor that could land her in jail for up to a year. She's been dubbed Central Park Karen. The name Karen has been assigned on social media to white women who feel entitled and call 911 on black people for the most innocuous actions. Daily Show host Trevor Noah uses his comedic genius to find humor in similar incidents.
Phoenix has also started to become notorious for how bad its police force is, with a record 44 police shootings last year. Yeah, more than any other large city in America. And now, thanks to cell phone video, we get to see it for ourselves.
Growing outrage tonight after an extreme reaction from Phoenix police to a little girl swiping a doll.
Cops in Phoenix threaten Aisha Harper, a 24-year-old pregnant woman with her two young children by her side. The video starts after the family pulls up at their babysitter's and are approached by police with guns drawn.
Phoenix police officers at times sounded like hitmen.
Get out the f***ing car!
You are gonna
get out the f***ing car! Car right now.
Get your ass off. I'm gonna
sweet Jesus. I'm gonna put a cap in your head. That's what the cop said. What happened to protect and serve? Like, I'm sorry, everything about that video is wrong. Right? Not only is the cop screaming like the woman is the one pointing a gun at him, but he's talking about busting caps like he's a lost member of NWA. There's no excuse for this. Like, there's no excuse. Unless maybe the cop says he arrests people in the way that he thinks that they speak. You know, maybe he's like, hey, yo, black man, get your ass on the ground. And as for you, S.A., you better stop acting like a pendejo. Now, what makes this whole thing worse is that this family wasn't robbing a bank or holding people hostage. No, this was the cops responding to a call about a four-year-old who took a Barbie doll out of a dollar store without paying for it. Yeah. And, like, I'm sorry, guys. You don't need to show up like the SWAT team to rescue a Barbie from a little girl. And as traumatic as this experience was, thankfully, no one was shot. And honestly, I don't think it's because of the officers. I think it's because of the well-trained civilians who happened to be on the scene.
Even the bystanders, you can hear them saying, calm down to the police.
Hey!
Whoa, sir, calm down!
And can someone just, like, you know, defuse the situation here?
I'm sorry, guys, but this is ridiculous. How do civilians know how to act like the police better than police know how to act like the police? How? Because this guy's next to the cop, holding his phone, but instead of panicking, he's trying to calm things down. I mean, he's even using the language cops are supposed to be thinking about. Guys, let's defuse this situation. That's how you know shit has gone wrong. Because back in the day, the guys holding the phone used to be like, oh man, he about to bust a cap in his ass, world star! But now the cop sounds like that, bust a cap in your ass! And the people filming the thing sound like trained police, you know, all right, de-escalate the situation, come on. Remember to read him his Miranda rights, come on. America clearly has a problem with policing and black people. On the one hand, you have people calling the police because they see black people as inherently threatening. And then you have police who only know how to respond to a call with an arrest or violence. So the question is, what do we do? Do we fix society or do we try and fix the police? Or maybe, got us thinking, maybe all we need to do is change the people who connect civilians to the police.
Well, for years, 911's been handling calls that turns out aren't actual emergencies.
Hello, 911, there are black people.
Ma'am, stay calm. I'm scared too. The officers are on their way.
So we came up with a program to help white people decide if their emergency was an actual emergency. We hired a black operator.
911, what's your emergency?
I'm on the train and these black people are talking. And it's loud, and I think there could be a fight.
Okay, sir, so let me get this straight. You called 911 because black people were talking loud?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, good. Here's what I need you to do. Stand up, walk to the window, and throw your bitch off that train.
No, he's just walking down the sidewalk, but it feels threatening.
Girl, bye.
Is she a bit unorthodox? Yes. But it's been efficient, and she's almost entirely professional. Almost.
So you're saying he's a 6'4", African-American male, broad shoulders, driving a Benz. I need you to look closely at him. Is he wearing a wedding ring?
No.
Stay right there. I'm on my way. Hold on, though.
Hello? Daily Show host Trevor Noah. You've been listening to COVID, Race, and Democracy. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Our producer is Lona Elias. Our executive producers are Polina Vasiliev, Akua Holt, and Steve Zeltzer. Our executive consultant is yours truly. We had production assistance from Michael Norwick and Lawrence Reyes. In the words of Nelson Mandela, it always seems impossible until it's done. Thank you for listening.
This has been COVID, Race, and Democracy, a daily broadcast by Pacifica Radio and its affiliates, produced by a group of committed men and women volunteers willing to make a difference. If you tuned in late, you can listen and download the show from our YouTube channel, Pacifica Foundation TV, or from the website, covidtaskforce.pacifica.org. Tell a friend about it. It will be worth it.